Welcome everyone to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudou.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
It's not often that we muster up enough energy to invite a guest on the show.
True.
So when we do, dear listeners, you know it's going to be good.
Also true. Yeah.
Yes. In this episode, we're excited to welcome our colleague and friend, French to English translator Michelle Hansen, to talk about how she, who is also a self-professed introvert who hates selling, how she landed multiple new direct clients by attending client-side conferences.
Yeah, we're excited to talk to Michelle about how she did this. And for myself, as someone who sees sort of under the hood of a lot of translators' businesses, I'm particularly impressed that Michelle managed to make this transition after 20 plus years as a translator. So I think that especially for those of us who have been freelancing for a long time, it's particularly difficult to get out of our established ways of thinking about our business and ways of working in our business. And Michelle really managed to do both of those. So before we get started, I wanted to mention that if you enjoy listening to Speaking of Translation, you might also enjoy taking a class with Training for Translators, which a lot of you know is my online learning community for freelancers. So coming up in January, we have 2 4-week online courses. So that's Editing and Proofreading for Translators with Karen Kochik and Marketing to Direct Clients with me. And also, drumroll, our first ever interpreters only offering, which is a 2-hour masterclass on interpreting for depositions with Judy Jenner, who has interpreted at over 800 depositions.
Wow.
And will, yes, impart all of her wisdom to you. The live course is January 24th, but if you register for it, you also get a recording. So if those sound like something that could help you kick your 2020 off with some high quality professional development, hop on over to trainingfortranslators.com, click on the Classes for Translators tab to learn more. And if you'd like to register for one of the 4-week classes, you will save yourself some money if you do that before December 15th. Eve, any update from you this month?
Yes, and keeping in that same theme, Corinne, in relation to Training for Translators, here's a teaser for you guys. I will be offering a challenge on that platform on supercharging your second language skills in February. So look for more info on that to come a little bit later from Corinne and from me.
Yeah. I'm going to be having 3 challenge groups in the first half of 2020, Eve's Supercharge Your Second Language Skills Challenge Group, March Marketing Madness with me, and Personal Task Management with Dorothy Rissette. So stay tuned.
Yeah. And so also, as I mentioned in the last episode, I will be releasing info on the book club for translators next week. So by the time some of you hear this, it'll already be out. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
I just had a little website glitch. It would already be out. So I have some exciting books picked out to get us started. And the book club members, and that could be you, will also participate in picking books. So the focus is going to be on books in translation, of course. And we will have online and in person through Zoom discussions, and we'll read six books throughout the year. So I'm super excited to be able to discuss in my nerd way both reading and translation with colleagues from around the world. And I'll be announcing the details on my website and in social media, and we can also post a link on the Speaking of Translation page. So keep an eye out and then go ahead and sign up.
Very cool. Okay, now let's welcome our special guest for today, French to English translator Michelle Hansen, who joins us from the Chicago area. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. So to kick things off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself so our listeners can kind of put you in context and tell us about how you got into translation, how long you've been a freelancer, and what your translation specializations are, and anything else you'd like to add about your background.
Okay. I think like a lot of us, at least in the U.S., I got into translation sort of sideways. I was a French and Chinese major in college, and my first job actually after college was at a family-run import-export business out of Hong Kong.
Wow.
And yeah, but my boss, true story, entered the Witness Protection Program.
Collective gap. Oh my gosh, I've known you for a long time and I didn't know any of this. This is great. Like, tell us more.
I'm
Well, he had a gambling addiction and apparently fell in with the wrong crowd. So, yeah, so I was there for like a year, and then the office closed because he went into witness protection. So
that was the interesting introduction to the business world, the quote business world. Yeah,
exactly. So then I had to find another job. And at the time, Berlitz had a language school and a translation office in Chicago. So I got a job over there working as a project manager. And that was the first time I ever knew anything about non-literary, you know, commercial mm-hmm. translation. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, this is fabulous. I love this. And I was very excited about it. But I brought the bad luck with me because they closed that office.
They also went in the witness protection program.
Right.
No, but they did close the Chicago office about a year later. But I already had the bug at that point. And I said, you know, maybe I could be a freelancer like the people I talk to every day. So mm-hmm. It took me a couple of years sort of stumbling around about finding a specialization. And I landed on medical translation. So as a language and literature major, I really didn't have a ton of science. So I ended up taking courses in medical writing and pharmacology and statistics and anatomy and physiology, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
So that I would be, you know, prepared to really be a medical translator. And now my business name is Global Health Language Services, because I also do English-to-English editing. And I've been doing that for 25 years in medical and pharmaceutical and health-related international development.
Super interesting, too, that, like you said, you didn't really have the science background, but obviously you have an aptitude for it and like it, because I was just actually at a meeting yesterday, nothing to do with translation, but it was actually my book club, and we were talking about this book that was science-y, and I was like, I like the book, even though I hate science. So, I mean, so that, you know, that's interesting that you have that background, but you were took the classes and you really liked it, and you were adept at that, too. So that's
cool.
Interesting to hear.
Yeah.
So, Michelle, to rewind a little bit, can you first give us a picture of your business before you started this direct client marketing effort? So what types of clients did you work with? How satisfied were you with that work? And a little bit about what your income situation was prior to this direct client marketing initiative.
So for the first 15 years, I would say nearly all of my work was through agencies, and I did practically no marketing at all. Mm-hmm. So I worked in my little corner of the universe with the door closed and the lights off. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I depended on existing clients for work, and I really didn't have a lot of work. And the surprising thing now, looking back on it, is that with all of the training and education that I did seek out those first few years, I completely disregarded the business side of business.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed in my income, which stagnated at like $35,000 a year for many years. Mm-hmm. But at the time I was married, there was a second income, I was raising my kids. So I sort of kidded myself that I was focusing on quality and, you know, learning all the medical stuff. And I really wasn't focused on quantity, which was... Now looking back, sort of a procrastination cloak of, but
or sort of self-protection tactic that you say, like,
right.
I'm doing this deliberately.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So then, you know, I got divorced, quantity became a bigger issue. And I thought, I really do need to do some marketing. And that's when I took your courses, Corinne. So I had the Beyond Freelancing and Direct Clients and breaking into the book market, because I thought, well, I'm going to explore it all and see what I like
what else might be out there. Yeah.
Right. And that's when I really launched my marketing efforts.
Interesting. Eve, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So, what made you actually decide to go ahead and pursue direct client marketing? And I know you've talked a little bit about that. You kind of, at the beginning, didn't really do any marketing, but in between those two times, as the years passed, did you consider other marketing methods before you settled on client-side events? And also, do you do the other ones on the side now too, or do you mostly just put your efforts into client-side events?
Yeah, because I'll just interject here that, Michelle, when you took a class with me, I know one of the things that you sort of struggled with was this idea, which I think a lot of us have, of like, I'll never be successful working with direct clients because I hate selling, or I can't sell, or I'm not a good salesperson. And then when you latched onto client-side events, that, which we'll talk about later, that really clicked with you. But yeah, tell us about that. Like, what made you decide to make the switch, and what did you think about doing?
Yeah, that's all so true. I mean, I tried, for example, the warm emails. Well, mm-hmm. I say that I tried. you know, I sent one and didn't get a response. And then I sent another one and didn't get a response. And I said, well, that doesn't work. You know,
yeah. Right.
So clearly, I just had this aversion to the idea of marketing myself.
Representative sample of two.
Yeah.
Right. Decided that's
didn't
never
work
gonna
on
work.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And obviously I was still learning, so I wasn't doing a very good job of it yet, you know, but the advice I think that you gave me that stood out the most is that the marketing that works is the marketing that you will do. And I thought, you know, I there were all sorts of methods and advice from, you know, in the courses and the other people taking the courses and so forth. And I read blogs and I subscribed to newsletters and I thought, well, here I go again. I am putting this cloak of learning, which is just pretending that I'm not procrastinating, you know? So I kind of stood back from it and said, what do I like? I really like conferences because they combine two of my favorite things, travel and learning. And I think that's probably true of a lot of our listeners here today, right?
Definitely.
So I thought, you know, it's one of my enjoyable activities. So I will combine that with the less enjoyable activity of marketing. And I had always kind of viewed them as professional development. And I have, you know, give myself a budget every year for professional development. So then I thought, well, if I reframe this as marketing, then I can go to more conferences if, and only if, I earn some income as a result of going to more conferences, right? I can't just spend unlimited funding on this. So I started doing that. I did earn more income. And so I've just stuck with that strategy ever since. I haven't really done much else because it's worked for me and I'm comfortable.
Cool. So now, why don't you tell us some specifics about these conferences you attended? And when we were preparing here, I thought of a few things I'd be curious to know. I mean, basically anything, but what conferences or types of conferences did you go to? Did you do any research or preparation ahead of time, or did you just show up? Mm-hmm. Were there other translators there? About how much did it cost you to attend them? And when you were there, how did you make contact with these clients? Like, are you just sitting there and you turn to the person next to you and boom, they happen to need a French English translator? Or did you, you know, sort of work the room in the social events or, tell us everything.
I want to interject there too that I'm super interested in that last one because I actually have done some client side events, big conferences or whatever, and that is the hardest part. And I also think for me it was hard, and I am really interested in what you have to say on that, Michelle, because a lot of times, like, they have their own goals and going, and I don't know, I'm interested too in knowing when you went, you know, we call it client side events, to know, were they conferences or were they trade shows? And maybe they were always conferences, I don't know, but I think there's a difference between that too, and how the mindset of the people there and how open they are to meeting with new people out a little bit outside their industry. So anyway.
Cool. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Tell us everything.
Did you have something else? Okay. And I'm happy to share the specifics because I do think like the three of us here that it's many of your listeners are maybe somewhat introverted and maybe not, don't have a background in marketing. And so, you know, they don't do it just like I didn't do it. And I think it's a viable strategy. So first of all, it's easy to find conferences, very, very easy. And like most of us, I'm sure I belong to several organizations. I've signed up for newsletters. So, you know, we're all inundated with information, including conference notifications. I got two this morning, as a matter of fact. So there's never a shortage of options. And just with what I do, everything I attend is related to healthcare and international development, at least in terms of marketing. I go to the ATA conference and then some editing and writing type conferences, but that's really not for clients. You know, that's for my own development. Except I have to say that going to the client side things has had the indirect effect of kind of raising my status among colleagues, because now I really am up to date in what people are doing. So I have gotten more referrals from people, translators, you know, at the translation conference, where I don't go as a marketing tactic at all, you know, and yet I've gotten a lot of work that way. So
that's super interesting that when you just casually mention, like, when I was at this, you know, tropical infectious disease conference a couple months ago,
right,
because you're just, you know, shooting the talking shop with colleagues, and then they think, wow, she's a go-getter, like, she's really up to date on all this stuff.
Exactly. And that's
so,
you know,
interesting.
It works that way too.
Very cool.
But it isn't, you know, cheap. So I always start with the lowest cost options, which means local. So being in the Chicago area, I'm fortunate. I do have a lot of options. And then I look at friends and family. And I have a brother who lives outside New York City and an aunt who lives out Washington, D.C., outside D.C.
Or make an excuse to go visit someone you want to see anyway and see if you can tag on an event.
Right. And then if you, you know, I wanted to be in a French speaking country, you know, you can kind of tag a vacation on so that one flight is pays for two different things, you know, ways like that to kind of keep
good costs. Ideas. Yeah. Good ideas. Right. Yeah.
So things like that. I always look at the dates, the cost, the location, the session schedules to kind of figure out which ones I want to attend. Sometimes a development client that I currently work with will, they send out emails saying, hey, we're going to be talking at, and you know, this event and that event. Oh, so I always look at those to see if I could possibly attend because, you know, talk to them in person.
Because they're going to be presenting or exhibiting or whatever at this conference.
And oftentimes, you know, I'm just a person and they email, you know, but so to when you show up, you really demonstrate that you have an interest and a commitment to being informed in their field. And so I think your status with them is a little bit higher, you know.
Well, and I think too, sorry, this is making me think of all kinds of like, you need to start teaching a class on this, Michelle, that, no, because one thing I always struggle with my direct clients is it is how to connect with them in person, because sometimes to go like invite them to lunch or something like that feels like maybe more of a commitment that they want to, than they want to make with somebody who they only have an email relationship with.
Right.
But if you can meet them at a conference, that's very low commitment. You know,
it is, and it's not awkward at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Being there.
Great. Oh my gosh, keep talking.
Yeah.
I'm taking notes. Yeah.
Well, what I have learned is that I do need to do some preparation and stuff to actually make it worthwhile. So, you know, I look at the exhibitors and then I scan their websites if I'm not familiar with them so that I have a plan of who I actually want to talk to. I look at the schedule and highlight the presenters' names and organizations. And then I think, you know, they're there to present, to talk about their research or their company, oftentimes because they are doing something publication worthy, or maybe they just published something. So I'd like to find out, especially, you know, are they preparing English language materials, for, you know, English to English editing, or, you know, obviously for French. And I have to say, I learned the hard way that you don't show up and do sort of direct sales and hand out business cards, you know, and I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm sure many of us are. So I just don't do it. And my first conference, you know, wearing the hat of a marketer was a complete failure. I was there for, it was a 3-day conference. I handed out 2 business cards, didn't talk to anybody. It didn't work. So then I thought, okay, I really need to figure out a way that, because I didn't like walking up to people and saying, hi, I'm a French English translator. Do you need that? You know, no.
Right. Yeah.
So same thing. I kind of go through the side door and I do just make a point to talk to everybody there, the exhibitors and the presenters, but the people sitting next to me, because they're there because they work in this field, the person getting coffee, you know, and by keeping up with industry news all year long, you can look at their name tag and see where they live or where they work. And, you know, I'm usually able to say something semi-intelligent about the field, ask a question, and then I just let them talk about their work. And people are happy to do that. And then, of course, you know, people are polite and they turn it around and they say, what about you? Right? So I kind of let them do the heavy lifting. And then they're almost always, well, A, surprised, and then B, interested, because I'm typically the only translator there, the only person outside of the field of research generally, you know?
Oh, so very interesting.
And so it works. So it gives me something to talk about that's not just, you know, marketing myself. They're always happy to give me a card, which becomes a card exchange, right? So they take mine. And then the other thing I do to sort of be, you know, oblique about it is to say, you know, hey, contact me if you or anybody in your organization might need translation of any sort or interpreting stuff that I don't do. And I said, I'll point you in the right direction. I have a network, if nothing else, the ATA directory, right? And I want to be helpful. I want to be somebody who could solve their problem, not somebody who's looking for work.
Right. Oh, that's super smart. Yeah. So you tell them, like, even if you need an on-site Tagalog interpreter, you know, let me know. And
call,
I can at least,
if you're lost.
Point you in the right direction, because you know, like, 80 million times more than they do about Tagalog interpreting.
Oftentimes, and people have contacted me saying that sort of thing, and I may just give them the ATA directory, but that's not something they even knew to look at.
Existed, you know,
so I feel like that's good, and that's such it's so low pressure for us, you know,
you're
not selling. And then even when I'm, you know, in at the coffee break with somebody who I know will never use my services, it's still like client education. I explain what we do. I correct the misperceptions that they have, explain, you know, the difference between translation and interpreting or whatever. So I kind of feel like, okay, you know, I've done the profession, mm-hmm. you know, a good term. And it's easy to talk to, you know, to people about that sort of thing. So
but that, one thing that strikes me too when you're talking about this is that I always think when people go to the ATA conference for the first time, mm-hmm. I say, like, you know, it can be intimidating, like, you know, you and I or different people have been going for 20 years or more, sure. or whatever. So we may not remember how it was in the beginning, but I think when I talk to new people, I say, like, remember, it's a conference and people are kind of open to the idea of talking. So, like, yes. that's kind of what you're saying too. I mean, you want to talk about the right thing so they don't get turned off. Mm-hmm. But what you're kind of leveraging that everybody is at a conference. So they're most people are expecting to be talking to people or kind of open to you coming right. up to them and saying, like, oh, I noticed that you're from whatever, XYZ City. And they have this big plant there for making blah, blah, blah medical devices right. or whatever you mm-hmm. say.
Right, exactly.
That they're open to talking with others because that's what they're there for.
Yeah. Right, right, exactly, exactly. And like I say, it's all low pressure, not intimidating, as opposed to what I was thinking sales was direct sales, you know, and I mm-hmm. knew I wouldn't be good at that.
Uh-huh. Neat. So... I was thinking, did you want to answer any of those other questions? Or I was just thinking about, like, how much you paid to attend or what you did yeah. when you got there. Or you kind of talked to us about that, like how you made these contacts. But I was wondering, did you want to talk any about, like, the cost of any of those, or do you have any information about that?
Yes. So medical conferences, or maybe this is true. This is all I know, right? So maybe mm-hmm. legal and financial and whatever conferences are also very expensive. So I would say they average about $500 for registration. Mm-hmm. I even paid $800 once when I really wanted to go to at the CDC in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So that it's like I say, it's not a low cost strategy, and I couldn't have done this initially when I didn't have a cushion, you know, to mm-hmm. Kind of figure this out. And then, and it's sort of a long term, you've got to give yourself 6 months to a year for it to pay off. So when you're starting out, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Plus, I didn't have the expertise and then the confidence just to talk to people about their field, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. You do have to kind of take those costs into account. And it's, like I say, not for a beginning person, but the marketing that I'm willing to do, I was mm-hmm. going to be there anyway, so yep. it became worth it.
And in your case, I just wanted to specify, it sounds like from what you're saying, kind of related to a question I had earlier, it sounds like you're really attending conferences and not trade shows, because I think those do have kind of a different vibe. Is that correct?
Yes, that is true.
More.
Yep. Yeah. And I said the trade show would probably be like pharmaceutical companies, and they're huge, mm-hmm. and it would really be hard. I'm not really the person they're there to talk to.
Right. That's mm-hmm. my version of trade shows. And a lot of times they're more, yeah, like they're there to sell, so they're not really open. Not that you're selling
right.
to them, but kind of. You know what
right.
I mean? They're, right, right. They're just kind of more focused on their big sales and
right.
not open. And a lot of times at the trade shows, I think we're not talking, the people that are there are not the right people to talk to anyway.
That's exactly, yeah, I think that's exactly it.
Yeah, but I think having said that, I think there are, of course, reasons to go to trade shows too, in that, you know, you can learn a lot about different industries, you can do some, you know, reconnaissance and stuff like that, learn a lot about what companies are doing what, that kind of thing.
But absolutely, yeah.
A little bit different, yeah, that would be a different audience that wouldn't be as close to what you're looking for, you know.
And I'm sure it totally depends. If you're in, you know, automotive translation, that might be perfect for you. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't really work for me.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, so after you attend, then what happens? You know? Tell us. So, I mean, how did it convert? You know, like people say, how did it convert? Like you mm-hmm. said, sometimes there's a long timeline, but how did you, not necessarily track, mm-hmm. I don't mean like formally keep a tracking sheet or something, but how did you know that, oh, this was a, not necessarily a direct result, but how did you know that, oh, I think going to this conference paid off even though it was 6 months later, or, you know, how did you know that it actually led to work? And did you do specific follow-up, or did contacts follow up with you, or, you know, that kind of thing?
Right. Well, and so I did start to track it because I realized that I was, you know, hiding behind my professional development, that I was spending money and not earning money. So I did uh-huh. start to track it. And as I say, I knew I had, after that first one was such a failure, I thought I have to be more organized. So I just created a very basic spreadsheet, you know, for the people I meet, their contact information, you know, when and where I meet them, and then any follow-up that I have. So all the business cards that I collect in a day, I enter into that spreadsheet. And it's very easy to do for me at a client conference, because, you know, at ATA, I've been around forever. I know lots of people. So my evenings are spent catching up with old colleagues and meeting new friends and drinks and dinner. But at a client event, I know nobody. I have an early dinner and go back to my hotel room. And I'm just sitting there by myself. So it works out great. So that very night, when it's fresh in my mind, I go through all the cards I've collected that day. I go through the presentations I went to that day, and I make a little note, you know, in my spreadsheet about what we talked about or whatever, even if it's just a couple of words. And then maybe while I'm at the conference, but definitely immediately when I get home, I connect with the people on LinkedIn. And that is with a personal note about, oh, I met you at the conference, whatever.
And great to meet you at the CDC conference last week. Right.
Exactly.
Would love to keep in touch.
Right. And I don't want to pester anybody. Yep. And I know, you know, we all return home to full inboxes and to-do lists and family and whatever. But I don't want to wait long, because, you know, that conference energy is high, but it fizzles fast, you know, sometimes on the flight home.
Right? Good point. So, yeah, really good point. Right.
Yeah, so from in me, and I'm sure in them as well. So, but click and connect, very easy for them to do. And almost everybody does, because I kind of have established my bona fides, you know, by attending their talk, by being at the conference. They're like, oh, okay, sure. You must be legit. Sure. I'll connect with you. So that's easy to do. And then anybody who seemed interested in translation, I will follow up with an email, hopefully within that week, because I feel like now my name is kind of familiar because I just contacted you on LinkedIn. But that is super low key. I don't attach a CV or a rate sheet or anything like that. I just sort of say, again, you know, hey, it was great, and that was a wonderful conference, and you mentioned you or the, you know, some other department might be interested. So whatever. I mean, it's short and not, it doesn't feel salesy to me. And that's really it.
Well, I think too, I can see, I mean, just from my own perspective, I could see, like, it doesn't seem salesy maybe because you, like you said, you have an existing relationship with them. You're just following up what you already talked about. So
yeah, as much as it may be brief.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then if they were that person who said, you know, I think someone in my office mentioned that we're going to be doing a project in Haiti. Right. Next year, then you would mention in your email, you know, great to meet you at the conference. And, you know, if you need any language support for the project in Haiti that you mentioned, I'd love to talk more, something like that.
Right, exactly. Okay. And that is how, so I got 2 new direct clients over the course of a year, but I did get clients that way. And one of them, what was kind of interesting, because I do try to review my spreadsheet from time to time, and usually before I go to the next event. And this one person, I met him at a global health event in Boston, and we chatted and whatever. But then 6 months later, I'm looking at my spreadsheet and like, oh yeah, that guy, because I had looked at the list of presenters and he's presenting again, but I didn't really remember what, you know. So I looked at my spreadsheet, said, oh yeah, he talked about this in Boston. And so the first time I met him, he was polite, you know, but not interested. And then the second time I said, oh, you know what, I saw you in April in Boston. He said, oh, and then he asked for my card, and then he gave my card to somebody else in his office, and then I actually got work from them. So it was, you know, it took time, right? But I thought, you know, yeah, and who knows, when you're at a conference and you're busy and overwhelmed, and, you know, I was just a stranger. But then the second time there was a little more context, and I think that really helped.
Cool. So Michelle, I know because you wrote a blog post for my blog almost exactly a year ago, in November of 2018. And as of then, you calculated that you had spent total about $7,000 on registration and travel for these conferences. And you had at that point brought in about $15,000 of new work. So I was just wondering, have you done a similar sort of return on investment calculation lately?
I have. And, you know, as I say, since I really enjoy this, I'm very motivated to go. So I'm motivated to find work there so that I can go, you know, to more. The work, the additional income from the first year was not a one-time thing. You know, it's a new client.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, yeah.
From these larger clients, right?
Right. And so I am this year, you know, probably $20,000 ahead of last year, which was $15,000 ahead of the year before, you know.
Wow.
Right.
So that's continued to be sort of cumulative, that you've increased, like, say, $20,000 a year
which I know is not sustainable, because lots of times these are specific projects and they will end.
Right.
But the long-term projects that last a year or two. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully, you know, and this did happen once somebody recommended me to someone else, because it was an HIV project. And they said, oh, but, you know, we have a sister organization that's about STDs and family planning. And we thought, you know something about HIV, you could work with them. And so I said, mm-hmm. Oh, this is great. You know, and so you don't really know where it's going to go. But I feel like just by kind of being there, being a real person, mm-hmm. and then showing that you have a serious interest, it really has helped. So mm-hmm. I've definitely, the income has gone up. And like I say, it's not just going to keep going in a straight linear fashion, but mm-hmm. but it's been terrific.
But it does sound like, just saying, like you're saying, in a way, it's just kind of, now though, it seems like it's folded into your business. So it is, it's not going to go away either. Like you said, it's maybe not a linear line, but it's not going to go back to zero from it. You know, like it's just a part and parcel of your business. That's something that you do. And that kind of, I think it just seems to me like over doing that, you know, continuing to do that over term, it will keep growing in a way, mm-hmm. you know, even if it's not like, oh, you know, 2 years from now, it's $800,000 or whatever. Right. It's obviously not going to go back down to zero. And it's been folded into your business process, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. And then just like if I had kept up with the warm emails, you know, I mean, I got better at it and I got more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And then my expectations too were not that I'm going to have a new client next week. So I was able to sort of sit back and say, okay, and I did the first year. I said, I'm going to go to 6 conferences. And at the end of the year, I'm not going to say, boy, did I just spend a hell of a lot of money, or did this actually work out? You know? And so, you know, just being a little bit more, organized about it all and realistic about it all, to say that I'm not, you know, I can do professional development, but I can't call it marketing, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm just being aware of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I do think too, just from over the years, my own experience, and then talking to people, and what you're saying about how, you know, it's a long term, in a way, it's a long term investment. Like you got some good return on it pretty quickly, really, but it's mm-hmm. not going to happen, you know, tomorrow. And I say that because years ago I was with a kind of a woman I knew, and she and her husband had a film business or something, and she went to some networking event, and she came back the next day, and she told me, "I'm never doing that again. I didn't get any work from it."
Yes.
And I just thought, like, okay, like she didn't understand, you know, and yours is kind of on a bigger scale, but there is a timeline to it, and you have to be willing to invest the time too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, Michelle, a big picture issue that a lot of us who work with direct clients think about is kind of going out and actively looking for clients versus drawing them into us, you know, through things like content marketing, website SEO, referrals, stuff like that, where we're kind of pulling them in, and as opposed to going out like you're doing and actively looking. And it seems like one factor in this calculation is that a lot of direct clients don't even really know that we exist. So that comes to my mind. Like I think, okay, we put this content out. I've thought of that too. You know, we put this content out, but then they won't even know to look for that content because they don't know we exist. So, and they aren't necessarily searching for a specialized translator. They don't know they need that. So, I don't know, based on your experience at the conferences, would you say that kind of thing is true? Like when, like you were saying how, you introduce yourself to someone and they're like, oh, you know,
the really? Reaction right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's right. The thing. Yeah.
You do what?
Right. Yeah. Right. And I absolutely agree with you that this is, they aren't aware. So meeting potential clients in person is sometimes just a way to let them know that we exist. And then mm-hmm. the conversations are, you know, client education types of conversations. And I'm happy to do that because I feel like, well, maybe they'll pass that on to the next person they meet. And, you know, eventually down the line, somebody will get work from this, right?
Yeah.
But frankly, you know, they know how much it costs to be there. Even if they aren't paying the registration fee and the travel themselves, you know, they realize, you know, they're away from the office that week and their company or whatever is paying for it. So they do realize that for me to be there at all means that I am, and then by extension, all of us translators that I'm talking about and interpreters, you know, that we are professionals and mm-hmm. we invest in our training and we're up to date in our field just like they are. So I think we aren't their peers. Like I'm not going to do the research that they do.
Right.
But they could view me as a fellow professional, and they realize like, oh, this is a serious profession and people invest in it.
Another thing too that makes me think of is going back to that is, so in the most cases from what you found when you go to these, you're the only translator? Or, I mean, it is kind of an interesting thing too, that like the we've talked about that idea before, I think in the past, that then if you are the only translator and you've already established yourself as a professional, you know, you're the expert, like you were saying, they're going to come to, whether it's for referrals to other people or whatever. So is that, do you feel like that's accurate?
It is, but it was interesting because I talked about a global health conference with a colleague, Stephen Vellante. You guys probably know him, mm-hmm. Spanish translator and French translator and interpreter. And so he came to the global health conference that was in Chicago this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, totally unexpectedly, I don't know what his marketing aspirations were, but he works at Harvard School of Public Health, and mm-hmm. somebody from the School of Public Health was presenting, and they saw him there and they said, oh, you know what? We have somebody who's going to be on our panel who's a Spanish speaker, and she's a little nervous about speaking in English. So would you mind sitting on stage with her in case she needs help? Can you believe it? So I thought, wow, you know, he had no idea that this would have happened. Oh. But talk about now all of a sudden out of the blue, he's at the front of the room, right? And so you are 100% being presented as the professional, uh-huh. you know, with people who are talking to their colleagues in their field of research. And I don't know if he ended up having to do interpreting or not, but I mean, that just sort of happened out of the blue. And I thought, well, this is a perfect example.
Wow.
You just don't know who you're going to meet and what's going to happen. So yeah, that was really something.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very cool. Okay. So to wrap up, Michelle, can you let us know what are your marketing plans for the future? Or do you have so much work that you're just keeping up with what comes in and trying to think of ways to spend all this extra money?
Well, I did attend viewer conferences in 2019, and partly that was due to family obligations, but partly it was due to the amount of work. So the Editorial Freelance Association conference was in Chicago in August, and I was fully planning to be there, but I had 100,000 words of translation in August. Mm. So, you know, I just obviously didn't have the time to go, but that was a good problem to have. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking one low-cost thing that your listeners can try is something I've done this year, you know, not being able to travel as much. So, and that is to sign up for any webinars that they have access to through their organizations. So just in this last quarter, I participated in a webinar on tuberculosis and another one on malaria, and they were offered for free as part of my association, you know, membership in, you know, tropical medicine type of associations. And then I followed up sort of the same way by trying to connect on LinkedIn, thanking the presenter, and they both accepted my LinkedIn, and it hasn't led to work yet, but same sort of thing, you know, you're sort of growing your network and your people and you, people that you know, you know, so that's really a help. And I would just say to people that, you know, it's the balance, right? And so we're talking about marketing. And maybe there are people who did sort of the opposite of what I did, who do lots of marketing and no professional development. So, you know, but a client conference would recreate that balance too. It would keep you up to date on the issues and the terminology, you know, in your field. So as long as you're doing a little bit of both, and you know, if you know yourself and you know what you like and you're what you're good at and your strengths, and that's kind of what I learned through the courses was, use those to build a strategy. And, you know, my ignorance of marketing kept me from even trying and turning that around and saying, well, I can attend conferences and learn about the latest in global health and talk to people whose work I respect, you know, all while visiting a new city. It doesn't feel like a work at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that probably comes across as naturally to them too, in that you truly are interested in learning. I mean, that's part of your goal too. And
right.
So that you are, in a way, I know what you mean, you're not their colleague, but you are their colleague in a way. I mean, you truly are interested in from a professional standpoint, and that comes across, as opposed to someone who would just be going to sell who's really not involved in that field, or I don't know. Anyway, it seems like a really wonderful approach that has worked for you. So
it has.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Michelle, for all of that wonderful information. I know that Corinne and I obviously really appreciated it. Got some great new ideas.
I took notes.
Yeah. And I know that our listeners did too. So, and they might have taken notes as well. So we'll put a link to your website in the show notes too, so that our listeners can take a look at your website if they want. And, you know, super thanks to everyone, to you for joining us, and to everyone else who's been listening today on today's episode.
Yeah, thanks everyone. We love hearing from our listeners and learning about how you benefit from the information we share here on Speaking of Translation. Just a couple of days ago, we got an email from a translator listener who successfully navigated a book contract negotiation after listening to our episode on book translation with Kate Daimling and Mercedes Gould. That was really gratifying. So again, our guest today has been French to English translator Michelle Hansen. And Michelle, we really appreciate your time and all the information you shared. And if you're listening to this on our website and you do not yet subscribe to Speaking of Translation, something is seriously missing from your life.
Do it right now. Yes. I even subscribe to it and we make it.
Yes, right. You should do that so you don't miss an episode. So you can look for us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you in a future episode.
Thank you.